From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. A congressional committee is considering a measure to reauthorize child nutrition programs aimed at helping kids from low-income families facing food insecurity. But opponents argue a provision of the bill places some 3.4 million students nationwide at risk of losing free meals at school, including more than 200,000 children in Florida. We take a closer look at the proposal and its potential impact as we explore local efforts to help families struggling to put food on the table. Plus, recent measures addressing public restrooms and gender identity have put the transgender community in the public spotlight. We'll listen back to a previously broadcast edition of the program exploring violence against transgender people. One report finds 2015 was the deadliest year on record for transgender individuals. First, this news. Concerns regarding public restrooms and gender identity have pushed the transgender community into the national spotlight. In March, North Carolina became the first state in the U.S. to enact a law prohibiting transgender people from using bathrooms and locker rooms that do not correspond with their sex at birth. Last week, elected officials in one Alabama city adopted an ordinance that would require people to use public restrooms that match their biological sex or face a $500 fine or up to 6 months in jail. And one conservative group is calling for a boycott of Target stores over the retail giant's transgender-inclusive bathroom policy. Supporters of transgender rights worry these policies are fueling animosity towards the transgender community. Later this hour, we'll listen back to a previously broadcast edition of the program in which WGCU's Jessica Mazaros explores violence against transgender people. But first, on April 20th, Republican Representative Todd Rakita of Indiana introduced a bill to reauthorize child nutrition programs aimed at helping kids from low-income families facing food insecurity. Opponents say a provision of the bill places 3.4 million students nationwide at risk of losing free meals at school, including more than 200,000 children in Florida at 276 schools. The provision could impact schools throughout the state, including schools in every county of Southwest Florida. That's because the proposal would restrict requirements for schools to choose the community eligibility option with national school lunch and breakfast programs. The community eligibility option was set up for schools in high poverty areas to provide free meals to all students. We'll take a closer look at the bill as we explore local efforts to help families struggling to put food on the table. Joining me now is Zoe Neuberger. She's senior policy analyst for the Washington, D.C.-based Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Previously, Neuberger served as an analyst at the White House Office of Management and Budget, where she was responsible for oversight of more than $30 million in federal aid spending. Zoe Neuberger, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks very much.
Also with us in studio is Shannon Cherivert. She's Director of Program Services at the Salvation Army of Lee, Hendry, and Glades Counties. Thanks for your time today as well.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you for having us.
I also invite listeners to join the conversation. Connect with our guests by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Zoe Neuberger, let's begin with you. Before we get into the details of this House resolution, just give us a little background on the work and mission of the Center for the Budget and Policy Priorities.
Sure. We are a nonprofit policy institute, and we focus on how public policies affect low and moderate income people. We work on a whole range of issues and program areas. We do a lot of budget and tax work. We work on housing, healthcare, and I'm part of the team that works on food assistance, including the school meals program.
And can you give us some general background on this child nutrition reauthorization bill? Aside from, you know, the particular provision we're discussing, what does this measure cover?
Sure. Typically, every 5 years, Congress takes a look at existing programs to see whether there are revisions that could be helpful. So the child nutrition programs, which include school meals, are due for one of those reauthorizations. The process has gotten started in the Senate, where the relevant committee has actually adopted a bill with bipartisan support. And the bill that you referred to that was introduced in the House is essentially the start of the process in the House of Representatives.
All right. And I discussed a little bit about what this particular provision would do, but can you explain that in a little more detail, including, you know, explaining what we mean when we use the term community eligibility option?
Yes. So let me start by explaining what community eligibility is,
yes,
and then how the bill would change that. So community eligibility was enacted in the 2010 reauthorization and has been gradually phased in over the last few years. It is an option, as you mentioned, that allows schools in high-poverty neighborhoods where the majority of students are low-income to serve meals at no charge to all of their students so that every student gets a free breakfast and lunch. It is primarily a simplification for schools that already face a lot of challenges. And the thinking behind it was that it just doesn't make sense for schools where the vast majority of students would qualify for free or reduced price meals if they filled out an application to have to go through that paperwork essentially to figure out which kids don't qualify. So community eligibility eliminates the application process. It simplifies operations in the lunchroom because nobody has to track who's in which category or collect fees. And so it makes the programs run much more smoothly, and it also ensures that all children at these schools can get a healthy breakfast and lunch, which better prepares them for learning. So as I mentioned...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, as I mentioned, the provision has been... it was phased in over a few years, and this is the second year that it's available to any qualifying school district nationwide, and it has been very, very popular. More than 18,000 schools around the country now use it. And what the House bill does is it proposes a much stricter criteria for which schools could offer community eligibility. So the criteria is already quite strict. Schools have to be high poverty in order to qualify, but fewer schools would qualify under the bill.
And, you know, when you mentioned this was first adopted in the 2010 reauthorization, you know, was this community eligibility option framed as something, you know, contentious or a partisan effort?
No, it was not at all. We championed the provision from the very beginning, and it was very well received on a bipartisan basis because it is viewed as a simplification, you know, kind of government at its best, getting out of the way of schools that are trying to serve meals to their students and so they can focus on educating them.
And you know, just beyond just the burden of, you know, the extra administrative paperwork and determining which kids are eligible and which aren't if the school loses that community eligibility option, is there something of a psychological benefit to students when all the kids in that school community get access to free meals? Does it, you know, maybe help reduce the stigma of poverty?
Absolutely. This is something that we hear very often from school officials, principals, superintendents, teachers, that when they adopted community eligibility, it really changed the atmosphere in their school. Certainly in the cafeteria, because we know that participation in the meals program increases noticeably when schools adopt community eligibility. And when all students are eating at no charge, there's unlikely to be stigma about who's getting, you know, who's poor enough to qualify for a free or reduced price meal. And so what educators say is that it changes the atmosphere in the lunchroom, but beyond that, changes the atmosphere at the whole school because children are on an equal footing.
Right, right. You know, have there been any studies linking schools that provide free meals to all students with improved academic performance? I mean, it kind of seems like common sense that you're not going to be able to learn that well if you're hungry.
It is. It's common sense, and what the research shows is that when participation in the meals programs increases, students do better in terms of academic achievement, their diets improve, and their behavior improves.
And the National Center for Children in Poverty finds that in 2014, nearly a quarter of all kids in Florida were living in households earning less than 100% of the federal poverty threshold, and that's $24,000 a year for a family of four with two kids. Generally, would you put Florida in a category of states disproportionately that would be disproportionately affected by a provision like this?
Florida would be affected because take-up of community eligibility has been very widespread.
Mm-hmm.
And as you noted, so there are more than 800 schools across more than 100 school districts in Florida that are using community eligibility to serve meals at no charge to all their students. Of those schools, 276 of them would be affected by the bill. Those schools serve about 200,000 students. And they would likely no longer meet the criteria to offer community eligibility, so they would have to go back to taking applications and monitoring which children qualify for free or reduced price meals.
And, you know, you had mentioned before that since its inception, this has been the community eligibility option has been a popular one for schools. Now it's an option for them nationwide. And as you'd already mentioned also, this wasn't really a contentious or partisan when it initially passed. Can you speculate on the motivation of you know, Congressman Todd Rokita or others who might support this and why they would include this provision limiting the community eligibility option?
I can't speak to their motivation. One of the things that they have said is that they want to target it more precisely. So let me say a word about the targeting. The criteria that's used now to determine whether a school can use community eligibility or not is what share of the students automatically qualify for a free meal because, for example, they're getting SNAP, which are also known as food stamp benefits, or they're homeless or in foster care. So if 40% or more of the students meet that criteria, then the whole school qualifies for community eligibility and can offer meals at no charge. What people often misunderstand that goes to this targeting question is that there are many more children who qualify for free or reduced price meals based on an application who don't just automatically qualify. Mm. So at the schools that would meet the existing criteria, typically more than two-thirds of the students are low-income and would qualify for free or reduced price meals. And at some of the schools that would no longer be able to offer community eligibility, it's a much higher share than that.
I see. We're exploring a bill currently in Congress that would dramatically limit the number of schools around the country eligible to provide free meals to all students. More than 200,000 students in Florida stand to lose free meals in school under that provision. We're speaking with Zoe Neuberger with the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, along with Shannon Charivert with the Salvation Army of Lee, Hendry, and Glades counties. I invite listeners to connect with our guests and join the conversation. Call 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Send email to GulfCoastLive@WGCU.org or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. Zoe, do you think part of the, I guess the motivation behind this could be simply, you know, reining in federal spending?
That could certainly be a part of it. You know, and the bill does reinvest some of the savings that would result in other important programs for low-income children, but we think that's a false choice. You know, it's important for all children to get three meals a day year-round, not just when they're at school.
Even if it is a financial issue, would you say the return we get on the investment from properly feeding kids and seeing their increased academic performance would eventually outweigh the initial financial cost?
I think you're focusing on exactly the most important point, that we know there are long-term consequences of growing up in poverty and even in poor neighborhoods, if your family doesn't live below the poverty line. And getting healthy meals at school so that you don't struggle with hunger and are prepared to learn can improve long-term outcomes for kids. So this, you know, the benefits and the savings of providing the meals have long-term effects.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the current status of this House resolution? Is it on the docket to be considered in any congressional committees at this time?
So the next step in the process would be for the relevant committee, which is the Education and the Workforce Committee, to do what's called mark up the bill. That's essentially voting on the bill. They can make changes or approve it as is. And that has not yet been scheduled, so it could be coming up soon.
When that does happen, do you imagine you or other representatives from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities would testify, regarding this particular provision?
We have published material stating our position on this provision and other aspects of the bill. Typically, those sessions don't include testimony. They're members of Congress considering the bill amongst themselves.
And based on your experience in Washington, I mean, is it entirely likely that this particular provision, this language, could be changed before it, you know, makes it to a floor vote?
It is certainly possible, and that's our hope in analyzing and publicizing the effects that this measure would have.
All right,
it could even be changed before the committee considers the bill.
Gotcha.
It's not too late at all.
Okay. Well, Shannon, with the Salvation Army, first of all, just tell us about your role and the service programs that you oversee here locally.
Sure. I'm the Director of Program Services here in Lee, Hendry, and Glades. We cover three counties. That includes a shelter that we have in Fort Myers, as well as a rapid rehousing program, and then our outreach centers. And our outreach centers are throughout the three counties and really specialize, I guess, in serving the community. Any person in need can walk in and kind of let us know what's going on. We'll sit with them and see how we can connect them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, representing an organization on the front lines of really combating hunger, I mean, when you hear about resolutions like this, I mean, does it concern you a little bit?
It does, mainly just because we see firsthand every day the effects of poverty. And to me, kids are always key because to watch a child walking through this in poverty or homelessness and stuff just touches a chord because they shouldn't have to, you know, and we as adults and the government and organizations have a responsibility to really watch out for them.
And, you know, I know you're not specifically targeting kids, but, I mean, do you see a lot of families with kids coming through for food assistance?
We do. I mean, unfortunately, we do. Most our food pantries serve, on average, last year alone, we did about 13,000 food orders.
Wow.
Through our food pantries. A large percentage of that are families and moms just trying to make ends meet and coming in and kind of using us as that gap week before their food stamps re-up. So, and in our shelter alone right now, we're full at capacity, and over 3/4 of that are families with kids.
Wow. And tell me a bit about the evening meal program as well. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Because we've been focusing so much on the breakfast and the lunch at school, but what's the evening meal program?
Yeah, so in our outreach center at Fort Myers, we have a hot evening meal. It's served by volunteers, and anyone can walk in. We don't ask, you don't have to meet criteria. If you're hungry, you can walk in and say, I would like a meal, and we serve it to you. So that is helpful for families who may not be able, moms and dads may not be able to feed them and afford that dinner meal, knowing that they're getting the free lunch at school, breakfast and lunch, then they can come to us for dinner and really make sure that that child has enough nutrition for the day.
And does that, you know, additionally concern you as well as far as this particular provision in the congressional bill? Because I'm thinking, you know, families come through with kids for this evening meal, and you've got to be realizing, you know, on days when they can't make it here, or folks that just don't know about it that haven't been reached yet, maybe what they're getting for free at school might be the only food they get.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the unfortunate and really sad part is we serve over 32,000 last year meals, hot meals every, so about averages up to about 150 a night. That's a very small percentage of when you look at the need in like Lee County, for instance. We only see those that choose to come and can come to us. Mm-hmm. So there are children out there that don't get to eat at night because they may not have the resources to get to us or know to come.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know from conversations over the years with folks at the Harry Chapin Food Bank of Southwest Florida, you know, the need for food really spiked in the economic recession, but that in the years that followed, the need didn't go down proportionally with the economic recovery. Is that something you found to be true as well?
Yeah, we haven't seen a huge decrease. And in the summer months, we actually spike and show an increase of families coming in because they don't have that school food to rely on.
Tell me more about that. I mean, I imagine everybody in your line of work is kind of girding their loins for the summer right now.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, in our summer, our pantry starts looking bare because we actually struggle to maintain the supply versus the demand. So we reach out a lot to community groups, ask to do food drives, if churches can step in or, you know, student groups and raise money or cans to bring in. We rely a lot on that to get us through the summer.
Mm. You know, I'm just thinking, like, let's say you're a single mom raising two kids. They're getting free lunch and breakfast at school. suddenly it's the summertime. Now this is like 20 additional meals every week that they have to provide.
Yeah. And it is a struggle for them. And unfortunately, I mean, there's assistance and food pantries and stuff that you can go to. But to supplement that is it's a lot of work for a parent, especially if they're trying to work as well and deal with daycare during the summer. So it's a large burden on families.
Yeah. We're exploring a congressional proposal that could limit the number of schools around the country eligible to provide free meals to all students. More than 20,000 students in Florida stand to lose free meals in schools under that provision, and that's just part of the 3.4 million students around the country. We're speaking with Zoe Neuberger with the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, along with Shannon Cherivere with the Salvation Army of Lee, Hendry, and Glades Counties. I invite listeners to connect with our guests and join the conversation. Call 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Send email to GulfCoastLive@WGCU.org or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Shannon, I remember reading either back in January or February in the Naples Daily News that the Salvation Army there was like their pantry was basically bare. Mm-hmm. And they were blaming that at least in part on, I guess, new restrictions on SNAP benefits, you know, what we used to call food stamps that took effect at the first of the year. Not necessarily something that you've experienced, in Lee?
We've seen an increase of people kind of coming into our food pantry and utilizing it. Thankfully, at this time we haven't dealt with bare shelves yet. Actually, much thanks to the community for stepping up. So our hope is that when people come in, we're able to serve them. So we've seen an increase, and we've heard a lot of clients stressing about this, you know, and saying how much more difficult it is for them. So we have seen it.
And where does most of the food come from that you're able to provide to folks, private donations or, you know, partnerships with other service organizations?
Yeah, it's a combination. A lot of it's donations, as well as we have a working relationship with Harry Chapin, so they are able to help us. So it's a combination of the two we rely on.
So as far as they're concerned, is there generally like a set amount that you can count on each month, or is it kind of a struggle sometimes?
It's a struggle. Yeah. And again, it spikes in the summer. We see a lot more people in need in the summer. Typically we range from 600 to 1,000 families that we serve in any given month.
All right. And as I mentioned, you're, you know, with Salvation Army here in Lee, Collier, or Hendry and Glades counties. Are you primarily focused in the Fort Myers area, or are you really kind of overseeing programs throughout that whole region?
No, we have programs in each county, and we have 5 service centers with a 6th one opening this year. So we're everywhere from Bonita. We have a new location in Lehigh. LaBelle, Clewiston, and Fort Myers with a new one opening in Cape. So the nice thing is that we're able to reach that whole area. And our service centers look different depending on the community. For example, out in LaBelle, we'll do a mobile food pantry just because of the dynamic of that community and the different needs that we see. So we try to reach the need of that community per se, but we are in every area.
Gotcha. And do you find the need is greater perhaps in, you know, more rural areas like Glades versus Lee?
To be honest, across the board with our stats, it's really pretty equal. The basis of the need and the foundation of the need changes, but the amount of the need is pretty proportional. For example, out in LaBelle and Clewiston, you may have families who are migrant workers or working poor. And again, we have to go out to them because the transportation here in Lee County, downtown Fort Myers, we are able to have it like we have a food pantry every Tuesday and people can come to us because of the bus system and such. And their needs, so the foundational needs and stories are sometimes different, but proportionally it's about the same.
All right. And Zoe Neuberger, just as we come up to the end of the conversation here, I wanted to ask a bit about how this community eligibility option has expanded since 2010. You say it's now available nationwide, but has it been available in some states significantly longer than others where they would perhaps be more disproportionately impacted if this goes through?
Yes, it was phased in a few states at a time, and Florida was actually one of the early adopting states, so it's been available in Florida for 3 years now. And what we have generally seen is that it is very popular with school administrators, and so take-up has been quite strong, especially for an option that is as new as it is. And unfortunately, the states with a stronger take-up would be the states more heavily affected by this bill.
Gotcha. And just as we sort of come up towards the end here, Shannon, just can you tell us a bit about how folks can get in touch with you if they're facing food insecurity, if their kids are hungry? What can they do?
Sure, of course. Our Fort Myers location is 2400 Edison Avenue. Again, our food pantry is open every Tuesday, starting at 9 o'clock. So if they needed to access that, they could come, bring their ID with them. We have some general information about their family structure so we can serve them dependent on the number of people in their family. And then our evening meal, it's right next to our, on Edison. So it's 2476 Edison Avenue, where every night, starting at 5, they can go and get a hot meal if they needed. And then in terms of all our other outreach centers and locations, the best thing to do would be to call our main number and get the information. And that main number is 334-3745.
All right. And Zoe Neuberger, I'm going to turn to you for a final word here. What would you like to leave us with?
Well, first of all, I want to be very clear that even if this bill became law, families would still be able to apply for free or reduced price meals.
Gotcha.
So I don't want anybody to worry about that. I think the question, but what would happen is it would be harder for schools in low-income communities to offer those meals and harder for families to access them because they would have to apply, and it's likely that there would be longer lines so children would have less time to eat. So I think the question is, why do that? In our view, it's a step backwards.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much to my guest. Shannon Cherry-Vare is Director of Program Services at the Salvation Army of Lee, Hendry, and Glades Counties. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And Zoe Neuberger is Senior Policy Analyst for the Washington, D.C.-based Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Great to have you with us as well.
Thanks very much.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, the transgender community finds itself at the center of national debate amid proposed policies in several states addressing the use of public restrooms and gender identity. We'll listen back to a previously broadcast conversation with WGCU's Jessica Mazaros. That's just ahead. You're listening to WGCU.